Fireworks at Mount Rushmore spark a debate about everything from fire safety to freedom from a virus. From South Dakota Public Broadcasting, today is Wednesday, April 14th, and this is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, we welcome Dakota political junkies John Hunter and Jonathan Ellis. We'll talk about fireworks. We'll also talk about the Chauvin trial in Minneapolis, what it could mean for South Dakotans. We hear South Dakota Poetry Out Loud winner Raheel Magosha in her own words. More than 60% of South Dakota kids don't go to a certified preschool. We'll talk about efforts to close the gap with resources from PBS and SDPB. Plus, the black women who changed the West. That's coming later in the hour. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment. News is first.
With SDPB News, I'm John Wynn. Governor Kristi Noem wants President Joe Biden to reinstate the 4th of July fireworks at Mount Rushmore. The call comes less than a month after spring wildfires led to evacuations in West Rapid City and the temporary closing of the Shrine of Democracy. SDPB's Lee Strubinger reports.
Governor Noem says the Park Service is reneging on a memorandum of agreement between that agency and the state of South Dakota. The agreement from 2019 states the Department of Interior and the state agree to pursue working to return fireworks to Mount Rushmore National Memorial in a safe and responsible manner beginning in 2020. The Park Service says the coronavirus, fire hazard, and water contamination are reasons for discontinuing the fireworks, which returned last year and were attended by then-President Donald Trump. Noem points to a federal document that states the event would not harm the Black Hills, but the document also acknowledges fireworks could pollute groundwater with a chemical compound. Ian Fury is a spokesperson for the governor's office. He says each concern outlined by the Park Service was taken into consideration for last year's event.
And all of those concerns were found to have been addressed. So my question would be, what's changed? If anything, on several of those issues, we've only improved over the last year. For instance, with COVID, nobody can really argue that the nation is anywhere but on the downswing with regards to COVID. In fact, President Biden said that July 4th is going to be the day that we mark our independence from the virus.
President Biden said he wants to meet a goal of small family gatherings and did not call for gatherings of large groups. Approximately 7,000 people attended the fireworks show in 2020. Governor Noem also responded to Park Service concerns about tribal opposition, saying the state values its partnerships with the nine tribes within the state's borders. She says the tribes were consulted and invited to attend. According to an environmental assessment by the Park Service, all tribes consulted objected to the event and regarded it as inappropriate. Noem is considered a 2024 presidential contender. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Lee Strubinger in Rapid City.
Midwest health officials are urging people who attended a recent youth wrestling tournament in South Dakota to get tested for COVID-19. Minnesota has linked 16 cases to the event. More than 2,000 wrestlers and spectators from Minnesota attended the meet in Sioux Falls between March 31st and April 3rd. The tournament was moved from Rochester, Minnesota to Sioux Falls, where coronavirus restrictions for sporting events are less severe. Former Attorney General for Oglala Lakota County and current Executive Director of Thunder Valley CDC, Tetewin Means, has announced her candidacy for Rapid City Area Schools School Board. Means is a mother of two school-age children and graduated from the Rapid City Schools. She's running to represent Area 2, which is currently held by Kurt Pochart, the current board president. In a statement, Means says the world is coming at our children quickly and they need support. Means graduated from Stanford University with a degree in environmental engineering. She has a law degree from the University of Minnesota and a Master of Arts in Lakota Leadership and Management from Oglala Lakota College. For weather today, we're seeing partly sunny skies in the west, mostly cloudy in the east. Beginning early tomorrow morning, a winter weather advisory is set to be in effect for the Black Hills, otherwise mostly cloudy skies across the state, with snow in the west later tomorrow afternoon. For SDPB News, I'm John Wynn.
And I'm Lori Walsh. Community support plays a vital role for people with substance abuse issues and addiction diagnoses. That has been particularly challenging during the past year. Dr. Deb Johnson is with the Avera Medical Group and part of the team of Prairie Doc physicians, and she's joining us now with more. Dr. Johnston, welcome back to In the Moment. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me and for having us in general. We appreciate it.
This is a really important conversation for the Thursday night on call with the Prairie Doc. Give us a little preview and talk about why you wanted to bring this issue to South Dakotans across the state.
Well, it's a big problem in South Dakota, substance abuse of various types, and a lot of times it is not well recognized, both in the community at large, and physicians often aren't as attentive as we should be to people who may have substance abuse problems, especially if it's not, you know, substances for which we are writing them prescriptions. We may be less aware of what else people are taking or experimenting with or taking regularly. I know I've personally been surprised to find out after the fact about some of my patients who have struggled with substance abuse issues. And I think that is a really, really important thing for people to realize. You know, we have this image of people with substance abuse issues as derelicts, basically, you know, people who don't have jobs and maybe they're homeless and just are involved in a lot of unsavory things. But, you know, we see an awful lot of substance abuse problems in people that are very high functioning. They, they hold positions of respect and responsibility. They go to work every day. They have families. They live in middle class houses or upper class houses. And you really can't judge who might have a substance abuse issue based on what you think about their position in society. And so we all need to be aware and vigilant and keep an eye on our own use of substances, but be aware that this could happen to anybody. Anybody could develop a substance abuse problem.
And to that point, how difficult is it to know if you have a substance abuse problem? I remember at one point during the pandemic, early in the pandemic, when people were talking about whether liquor stores would be open, and some of my friends were like, that's really important to our community, which started a whole new conversation. When are substances like alcohol or recreational marijuana use, which is not illegal in South Dakota,
right,
but many people are talking about what will happen in the future. When do you know some substances are providing a challenge to you that you think you need to talk to your doctor about?
You know, I think if the question crosses your mind, it's worth at least a conversation. I see more trouble with people who are, and this is often part of the disease, people who struggle to recognize that they may have a problem. And some of that reflects the population that I see, where they are not people who have kind of come into contact with the system so much through legal troubles or trips to the emergency room or those kinds of things. But one of the key factors, or one of the criteria that we look for in diagnosing substance abuse issues, is people who have had the desire to cut back or have mm-hmm. thought about cutting back and had trouble doing so. People who use more of whatever substance they are using, whether it's alcohol or marijuana or street drugs or anything else, than they intended to. Maybe they didn't mean to go out with the work crew this evening, but they ended up going out and they had one or two too many. And so they're drinking when they didn't plan to, drinking more than they planned to. Maybe they are finding that they have some withdrawal symptoms, that they're really wanting that next drink to minimize those symptoms. Maybe they're having cravings. They just really, really want that substance. So I think if you're having any of those symptoms, it's worth at least a conversation and an assessment with your doctor. And it should be a warning that, you know, you may have some issues and you need to be paying attention.
Yeah. You can tune in to On Call with the Prairie Doc on Thursday night and really dive deeply into this conversation with Dr. Johnston and with a series of professionals. That's at 7 p.m. Central, 6 Mountain on SDPB-TV. You can also find them online at prairiedoc.org or search Prairie Doc on Facebook. And Deb, this just seems to me like something that the Prairie Doc program and this team of physicians is just really set to do so well. How often do you get to tune in to South Dakota doctors talking openly about something like this? It could really be life-changing for so many people. So thank you for talking with us about it today as well.
Thank you for having me.
Up next, the Dakota Political Junkies will join us. We'll talk about Governor Kristi Noem and President Joe Biden and fireworks on the 4th of July. You are on listener-supported South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Health reporting on SDPB is supported by Monument Health.
Program funding provided by First Dakota National Bank, supporting the businesses and individuals with a dream and the passion and drive to make it a reality. What will be your South Dakota first? More at firstdakota.com/first.
Hi, this is Carol Johnson. You are listening to the SDPB Drive for the Sound Vision Campaign. My husband Al and I are supporting a matching gift challenge for this drive. Every gift made this week will be matched dollar for dollar. Just being a Friends board member is not enough for us. As strong believers in SDPB and its mission, we feel the need to help kickstart the campaign and to encourage you to join us with a gift of your own.
A successful campaign will allow SDPB to expand access for viewers and listeners, continue innovation in programming, and expand educational services through the Early Learning Initiative. Join us today, make a gift to the Sound Vision campaign, and double your impact. Go online at sdpb.org or call 800-333-0789.
Program funding by TSP, an architectural, engineering, interior design, and planning firm rooted in and supporting communities across South Dakota. TSP's rich history provides the passion to make our communities better by design for another 90 years.
Are listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We're going to switch gears a little bit. Kara Hetland is joining me from the Kirby Family Studio inside SDPB Sioux Falls Studio for a special edition of our Spring Member Drive. As this week, we're dedicating part of this valuable airtime to the SDPB Sound Vision Capital Campaign. Hey, Kara.
Hi, Lori. Thanks for having me. We are in this final phase of the vital campaign, and to inspire you to help us close it out, a group of generous donors has offered to match all gifts up to a total of $50,000. And by meeting this important challenge, we will have $100,000 plus to invest in inspiring programming and resources that you rely on, including access to the Sioux Falls studio where I am today. Your generous gift will help us wrap up this campaign. And just think how often you listen and watch SDPB and consider a generous gift because of that. If you use our services daily, consider a dollar a day, $365, as an investment in our services that will continue to pay dividends for years to come. Call us right now at 800-333-0789 or give online at sdpb.org.
So this is the final phase of the Sound Vision campaign, and it is focused on that locally produced SDPB programming and the local reporters and the local news beats, the shows like In the Moment. Thank you for listening. And that is why we're here today. It's because of you, and it is to urge you to make a special gift above and beyond your annual membership. It's a gift that invests in the future of programs like this. Maybe you have never made a gift to SDPB. Maybe you listen to these member drives and always think it's going to be your turn, and then the week passes and you don't do anything. Well, this is a great time to invest in the future of this really vital public resource. you can give online, sdpb.org, or call 800-333-0789.
I want to give a shout out and thank Jill from Brookings and Mark and Lisa from Arlington. Thank you for your gift. So far, we have raised $19,966 towards that $50,000 match. And the success of this campaign will provide us the additional resources needed to continue to serve you, our community, and in a deeper and richer way. And there are many, many ways in which SDPB is building community. We build community one interview at a time. And this is something that you hear on In the Moment, which is SDPB's daily news and cultural radio magazine program. And we have a deeply rooted sense of place, and that place is right here in South Dakota. In the Moment features authentic conversations with newsmakers, scholars, artists, and everyday South Dakotans. And we bring you world-class radio storytelling featuring the highest journalistic integrity. And your donation will ensure that these stories and these interviews will continue.
I love this story by story, song by song, poem by poem, interview by interview. SDPB also builds community, one experience at a time. And we're going to learn more today about the Early Learning Initiative, or ELI, which was created by SDPB to meet a need in 2020. That is helping ensure that every kid in South Dakota begins kindergarten ready to learn, whether or not they're part of any preschool program. So you can be part of this Sound Vision campaign. We're going to take you back to In the Moment here and start with some political conversations on the Junkies, the Dakota Political Junkies. But right now, give online, sdpb.org, or call 800-333-0789. We'll be right back.
Program funding by ReliaBank, personal and business banking solutions, reliable services, and a friendly welcome at 9 locations across eastern South Dakota. ReliaBank, a brighter banking experience since 1920. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Every story has a beginning. Think back to when your journey with SDPB began. Was it waking up with Morning Edition? Finishing your day with Jazz Nightly? SDPB is your constant companion during your commute, whether that is across town or across the state, informing you in times of crisis, or beginning a relaxing weekend with laughter on Saturday morning. SDPB has been part of the fabric of South Dakota for nearly a century, and SDPB is part of your story. I'm Ryan Howlett, the Development Director at Friends of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. This week, we're asking for your support to continue to make outstanding news and entertainment on the radio. Please consider a gift. You can do so online at sdpb.org/donate or by calling 800-333-0789. And the best part, your gift this week will be matched by a group of the Sound Vision campaign donors. SDPB, building community one story at a time.
The economic heartbeat of South Dakota, from big industry to the family farm, is highlighted on our business and the economy beat, supported on SDPB by SDN Communications.
No, that's not right at all, Tucker. In fact, you're wrong.
People are laughing at us all over the world. They think we're stupid, and we are. I mean, we're being led by stupid people.
This is about the Constitution of the United States and the facts that lead to the president's violation of his oath of office.
You know, if I took my fist and hit somebody in the face, I'll hurt them, but they'll heal. But you can use your mouth or a pen some way to hurt somebody, it'll never go away.
Come on. This guy is a dog whistle about as big as a foghorn.
You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Lori Walsh. Well, people around the world watched last summer's 4th of July fireworks display at Mount Rushmore. The much-publicized event brought President Trump to South Dakota. The State Department of Tourism reported an uptick in tourism spending and international exposure for the Mount Rushmore state. But the state also took criticism for lack of COVID precautions during the celebration, as thousands gathered without masks. Protesters also sought to raise awareness about the violation of such a gathering in the sacred Black Hills. Well, since taking office, President Biden has placed a ban on fireworks at the National Memorial. Just yesterday, Governor Kristi Noem sent a letter to the president asking that he reverse that ban. "This year we mark our independence from the virus," wrote the governor, adding, "Mount Rushmore would be a perfect place for a national celebration and fireworks show." Joining us for our Dakota Political Junkies conversation today, we welcome John Hunter, publisher emeritus of the Madison Daily Leader, and Jonathan Ellis, investigative reporter and columnist for Argus Leader Media. John, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Lori. Thanks for the invitation.
Jonathan, thanks for being here as well.
Thanks for having me, Lori.
Let's start with you, Mr. Ellis. We have a couple topics to cover today, but let's start with that 4th of July fireworks and the conversation between Governor Noem and President Biden. How is this all unfolding? What is Governor Noem trying to attempt here?
Oh, boy. here we go. Yeah, this is just more about how so much of our politics is wrapped in symbolism. And, you know, I think that for Governor Noem, that event certainly helped put her, helped her, I think, in conservative circles. I mean, the event itself, the speeches were, I think, conservatives appreciated the speeches that both she and the president gave. The fireworks display was pretty cool. I'll have to admit myself. But it's a lot of symbolism. And you have suddenly under one administration. Sure, we can have fireworks. National Parks, service. Sure, that's fine. And then under the new one, it's suddenly there is inadequate safety measures in place. And so this is really just, a peripheral symbolic issue.
Yeah. John Hunter, it's bumper sticker politics. You can say Independence Day, freedom from a virus. You can put that in theory on something the size of a bumper sticker, but it's a lot more nuanced than that. How do you see this sort of conversation about fireworks here in, mid-April?
Well, it's a multifaceted issue. We like to think that it's one side or the other, but there's four or five different sides here. There's an environmental thing, and there's a tribal thing, and Republicans and Democrats. But in Governor Noem's letter to President Biden, she made a pretty compelling case as to why this should be done, and I appreciated that, at least in her letter. Now there may be some political undertones to it and so forth, but the letter itself said, look, here's the agreement we had. Here's the things we've done. Here's the framework that we can have these fireworks. We've cooperated with that. We have the ability to call it off at the last minute, the kind of the go, no-go thing based on environmental factors like wildfires and so forth. So I appreciated that the letter itself made a compelling argument to do that rather than just saying, I know you're opposite of, you want to undo everything that President Trump did. It stayed away from that. Now, it may devolve into that later, but at least at the moment, I thought she made a compelling case.
Now, three of us here are talking from East River, South Dakota, and as we recently had these fires in the Black Hills that were very close, caused a temporary closure of some of the areas and the National Memorial. It's pretty fresh in people's minds of what the actual risk is of sparking a wildfire, especially in a year of such drought. So, Jonathan, and this is not a fair question for a Sioux Falls-based reporter, but do you think that experience is going to stick in the minds of a lot of Black Hills residents and change their opinion on whether or not fireworks should be there? Is that not an opinion-changing thing if you live in the hills?
Well, I think for some people, definitely it is. Now, I grew up in Colorado and in the mountains of Colorado, and we had fireworks displays. And some years they would be canceled because it was simply too dry. I started my newspaper career covering forest fires, so I understand where some people in the Black Hills would certainly be hesitant about that if the conditions were not good, if it were very dry. Hopefully they have defensible space around their homes too. But I also think that there are a lot of other people who appreciate having the fireworks display, especially in the sense of what economic benefits there might be in having the display as well.
Yeah, and to John's point, those decisions can be made go or no go pretty close to the date. So I want to pivot a little bit because John Hunter wrote a column in the Madison Daily Leader, which you can find online, and it was really talking about research at universities and colleges in South Dakota and sharing that research with the rest of the state. It was really compelling to me as someone who's always looking for what scholars and academics and professors and scientists are kind of launching their next big thing. What are they interested in? So we can invite them to the show. But there are other uses for it. And Dakota State University is doing something new and interesting. John Hunter, tell us a little bit about that, please.
Well, they've launched they call it a repository, and it's called the Beetle Scholar. And essentially, it's kind of a one-stop shop for all the things that are published or presented at the university. And so I have some friends there that I've expressed this frustration to for a long time, that a lot of good research is being conducted at DSU. And And the research is a healthy process for the student or the faculty, but I want to get that outside the university walls and to somehow get that information to people who can use it and improve South Dakota in all sorts of ways, environmentally, economically, justice, all that sort of stuff. So, and the other universities are doing it as well. So this repository, you can go there and it's called Dakota Scholar. I can't remember the URL right offhand, but they publish all sorts of stuff, including art projects by students and faculty and so forth. But I would love to see some of that stuff taken advantage of. And there are the other universities, too. I've seen a lot of great agricultural research out of SDSU, and I'd love to see producers see that, read that, adopt, great practices from that. Think of the medical kinds of things from USD or engineering or mining things from South Dakota Mines. I'd love to see that great research, which I think they're conducting good research, be disseminated more broadly.
Yeah, that URL is scholar.dsu.edu. We'll put a link up to it on our website as well, scholar.dsu.edu. Jonathan, I want to move on to the Derek Chauvin trial in Minneapolis, what we're already seeing there, and how that circles back to some of the coverage, you provided and others from the Argus Leader provided of unrest and peaceful protests and some violence in rioting in the city of Sioux Falls. Here we are again.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll get to the point, but we're seeing obviously with the latest death of Dante Wright. I mean, we're seeing certainly in the Minneapolis area. I think rioting, protesting on scale with probably what happened last year with George Floyd, and now we're starting to see events, pop up across the country. I've not heard of anything happening here or, but that doesn't mean, certainly the sentiment is out there that still exists that, and these extrajudicial police killings for minor crimes or whatever have to be, deserve greater attention, and especially when they're involving, it seems to be disproportionately minority victims.
Yeah. Again, this was the officer involved said it was an accidental shooting, an accidental discharge. She intended to grab her taser and instead grabbed her service weapon. There's been great debate about how, improbable that is or not. There's been resignations in the Minneapolis Police Department. Jonathan, when things were happening last year and Mayor Paul Tenhanken was talking and the Chief Police Matt Burns was talking about their connections with people in the community and the conversations they were having, I remember Paul Tenhanken just saying, "Hey, my door is open for you," and then other people saying they never got a meeting with him. Have you or anybody at the Argus Leader really seen measurable changes come out of City Hall for the people who said this is an issue that is very different than what's happened in Minneapolis, but it is an issue worth talking about? Have you seen anything come out or from the state legislative session that might have addressed some of people's concerns about law enforcement training and law enforcement communication with the public since last summer?
Well, that's a really good question, Lori. And I'm not, you know, and to go back to the legislative session, I do believe that there were some bills, and I would have to go back and, you know, we're focused on some other areas, but I do believe there's some, there's some discussions in the legislature about police training and that sort of thing. As far as, you know, I think in the city of Sioux Falls, there was there was some discussion about, again, trying to diversify the police department, more diversity in the police department. So I think that that's an ongoing effort, and whether or not that's, you know, that's not something you just turn a light switch on, right? I mean, that takes training, takes a lot of time, and getting new officers in takes time. So I think that there is a concerted effort on the part of the city to kind of move in that direction.
Yeah. To argue that point, people would say, well, you've had lots of time. I mean, this is not a new issue after George Floyd was killed. I think officers are doing a lot of things that, that people want more from, and other things that they say, hey, look, we've already got this in place.
Yeah, I mean, it takes time to recruit. It takes time to then send people to training. I mean, that is, I don't think you can just, again, over a year, you'll find applicants, get them to, you know, they have to go to law enforcement school. They have to, then they spend time, you know, before that, I think they're fully allowed on their own. You know, so that all of that takes time. It's important to note too, that, you know, Sioux Falls has not been the most diverse city in the country, but that diversity has been growing in recent years. And so, you know, I think that that's you want to reflect, you want your police department to certainly reflect your community, and I think that there are efforts being made to do that here.
Yeah, so I'm finding just in a casual search, Senate Bill 135, which is a response to resistance training, law enforcement officers shall attend response to resistance training and further training at least once every 2 years. That's one of the new things that came out of the South Dakota State Legislature. John Hunter, what do you want to add to this?
Well, there was a great essay in the Minneapolis Star Tribune. I just remembered this. It was a couple of weeks ago, and it was talking about how what they call outstate Minnesota has such a different impression of law enforcement than people in the Twin Cities do. And as I dug into that, it completely made sense to me, in that in small town Minnesota, and you can equate that to small town South Dakota, where people know the law enforcement people that are in your town. There's one sheriff, there's three deputies, there's one police chief, and they live down the street from you, and your kids attend school together, and you see them at church or whatever. In Minneapolis or the Twin Cities or maybe Sioux Falls, I'm trying to figure out exactly where Sioux Falls fits into this, is that the police is a faceless badge. The person who you see as a policeman is not someone that you know. And I don't know, it makes complete sense to me that, and I think outstate Minnesota, probably small town South Dakota, trusts their law enforcement maybe a little bit more because they know them as people. And how you can bridge that gap, that's hard. And I know a lot of police forces, I know they've done that in Baltimore and in Indianapolis, where they're trying to get, you know, assigned policemen to neighborhoods so that they can get to know them, almost a series of small towns. But the impression of a law enforcement is much different in the Twin Cities than it is in most of the rest of Minnesota, and I would guess most of South Dakota.
Yeah. Jonathan, anything you want to add to that? What is our relationship with police officers in Sioux Falls is the question I would ask you. Like, do you know, the people who patrol your neighborhood? You know your school resource officer?
I don't know the school resource. I mean, obviously my kids do. There's a police officer who lives down the street from me. I know police officers. I coach soccer with a police, you know, so I know them, but I also don't want to, I'm also in a different station, I guess, you know, than some other people. You know what I mean? I kind of run in social circles that would probably put me in contact, whereas maybe other people don't.
Right. So we just wait and see what happens as this, we wait for a verdict and we listen to, you know, community members and what they have to say, but we're not necessarily hearing anything strong coming out of the mayor's office right now, and there doesn't need to be at this point. Is that kind of what I'm getting from you, Jonathan, as you pay attention and have your ear to the ground on this?
that there doesn't need to be.
Well, No, what I'm saying is that there isn't a strong call from the community that the mayor needs to do something more right now. That nobody's
not taking any criticism that I've heard.
Yeah.
I think it's also important to remember that it's important not to govern by outlier. Okay, I mean these incidents are incredibly rare, and I think that certainly we all agree that we need to review every one of them and training and such. But yeah, it's important. I think that a lot of the mayor and others would probably say we haven't had this issue in Sioux Falls, and so I am not aware of there may be very well be conversations that I'm not aware of though.
Yeah, right. Well, we'll have more conversations about this in the days ahead. Dakota Political Junkies, it's a weekly feature on In the Moment. You can hear our great team of political minds every Wednesday at about 12:20 Central, 11:20 Mountain. My guests today have been John Hunter, publisher emeritus with the Madison Daily Leader, and Jonathan Ellis, who is with Argus Leader Media. Jonathan, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, Lori.
John Hunter, great to hear your voice today. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Lori. Take care.
Raheel Magosha from Washington High School in Sioux Falls is the winner of the South Dakota Poetry Out Loud competition. She spoke with SDPB's Jackie Hendry for a recent episode of South Dakota Focus. Here is Raheel Magosha in her own words.
I'm Raheel, I'm 17. For the past 3 years, I've been involved in speech and debate. And through those people, through that activity, I've met some really amazing people. And my friends had started a poetry club when I was around, like, I guess, freshman year. And it's been, like, a really cool thing to be a part of. And through speech and debate, my oral interp team, it's been kind of tradition for the senior to do poetry out loud. It's judged on accuracy and precision and presentation. So for me, it was really just memorizing different poems and different poets, but also trying to understand why they wrote their poetry. So it really took me and my coach like 3 hours just to like look up the poem, why it was written, what the poet was thinking, and try to really understand their perspective, but also put my own feelings and my own perspective into it.
And every night, I give my body up, limb by limb, working upwards across bone towards the heart. But morning comes with small reprieves of coffee and birdsong.
But at the same time, I think a big part of poetry is to just like say what you feel. And so when I would be competing and when I'd be doing these poems, I honestly would just say it from the heart. So I think a lot of the preparation is in the lack of preparation.
To be a good neighbor, you really just have to express yourself in any way you can and speak up any way you can. And I think we all understand when the right time is to speak up or why we should, but it all amounts to, do we do it or not? And I think that a good neighbor is someone that realizes that and takes action and really just thinks outside of themselves.
That is a little bit of Raheel Magosha. She is a senior at Washington High School in the city of Sioux Falls. She spoke with Jackie Hendry on South Dakota Focus as part of a new feature called Good Neighbors. And you can see that video and more on our website at sdpb.org. Up ahead, we talk about closing the gap for early learning in South Dakota. Kevin Nelson is with us. Stay with us on listener-supported South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Program funding is provided by SDN Communications. 50,000 miles of resilient broadband fiber supporting online banking and other essential businesses right where you need it. More at sdncommunications.com.
Hi, this is Ron Rohr. You are listening to the SDPB Drive for the Sound Vision Campaign. I'm proud to offer a matching gift for this phase of the drive. Every gift made this week will be matched dollar for dollar. The matching gift fund will help the Sound Vision campaign reach its goal by giving you, the listener, more bang for your buck. I'm excited about the Sound Vision campaign. The funds raised will assure SDPB's continuing ability to bring us first-rate programming about all things South Dakota. Everybody has their favorite programming. My favorites are the detailed, in-depth coverage of South Dakota government and the stories of South Dakota's unique history. Please join me today, make a gift to the Sound Vision campaign, and double your impact. Go online at sdpb.org or call 800-333-0789.
Program funding with your support and by Gene Hufford of American Family Insurance on Jackson Boulevard in Rapid City. Gene and his team working together to serve your needs. Gene Hufford Agency Incorporated. GeneHufford.com.
You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Lori Walsh. In South Dakota, more than 60% of children do not attend preschool, which can drastically impact readiness for kindergarten. Well, South Dakota Public Broadcasting, as part of the Sound Vision campaign, is making it easier for parents and caregivers to access proven, effective, and fun early learning resources. We're going to learn more about that now with Kevin Nelson. He is joining us for a look at SDPB's Early Learning Initiative, or ELI, and the Sesame Street and Communities Project. Hey, Kevin, welcome back.
Well, hello. Thank you for having me.
I just get to look at some of these resources and get happy all over again, because to me, as a parent, that's some of the most fun time is preschool. I mean, that's when just life is sweet to me. So tell us a little bit about ELI and the Sesame Street and Communities connection.
Sure. Well, you know, the Early Learning Initiative really started in South Dakota because South Dakota's only about three states, we believe, without a formal funded and standard-based preschool program that's available to all learners across the state. And what we really wanted to do was to come into place and fill in the gaps and help our earliest learners in those first steps of their educational journey. And the whole goal is to prepare children for kindergarten ready to learn. And, you know, SDPB and public TV and everything in South Dakota, STPB has been doing this for about 100 years. It's really kind of in our DNA. So it made a lot of sense for us to get this going and help parents and educators and caregivers with what they need.
So I want to give an example, because this morning we were talking earlier on the program about the Derek Chauvin trial, and I wondered, if I had a preschool, how would I talk to my child about race? And I went looking on the Sesame Street and Communities website, and I found racial literacy, and this was the exercise they had for little kids, and it was breathe, feel, and share. So when something stressful happens, which really is about much more than racial literacy, but, you know, when something stressful happens, if your child is excluded or teased, breathe is take three deep belly breaths. Feel is to notice how you're feeling and think of words you might use to respond. For instance, I don't like that, or that's wrong. And share was tell a grown-up what happened. And I just think, Kevin, for a parent who's trying to process so many things about the world and find actionable items to say, how do I deal with, you know, dinner with a three-year-old? You can find just a treasure trove of resources and connections and ideas on these websites and in these communities.
Absolutely. You know, we were very fortunate here in South Dakota, Sesame Street, we reached out to them about Sesame Street and Communities, and this is normally an urban program, and they went rural this year, and it had something to do with the pandemic, and we were one of 20 stations that had the opportunity to get this material out, and we had over 500 parents and caregivers and educators reach out to us, and we sent them packages full of really good stuff, and you know, the topics in Sesame Street and Communities deal with what you're just talking about, difficult times. And it's called Difficult Times and Tough Talks. There's also Healthy Minds and Healthy Bodies. And then there's always the traditional ABCs and 1, 2, 3s. And we did a lot of training on how to do that. And we had a summit that really got into the social-emotional issues, which you were just talking about. And, you know, one of the most startling things that happens in our country is, and that we know is that over half of our children in America, and that's 18 years and under, have been through at least one adverse childhood experience. And those can be things like abuse and neglect and domestic violence and household mental illness and substance abuse, but they also can be a death in the family. And how our youngest deal with that can affect them for the rest of their lives and how we interact with them. So, you know, falling under that area of tough talk and tough times, we want to help parents and educators and caregivers to help those youngest ones navigate through what is really, quite frankly, for them, very, very tough times.
Right. And this past year, I mean, there have been all kinds of new things thrown at parents and at the little kids with separation from grandparents, maybe people that they couldn't see, that they wanted to see, understanding what it means to be wearing a mask and being afraid of germs, all kinds of stuff. Tell me a little bit before I let you go. Just, you know, we're talking about the Sound Vision campaign and individuals stepping up and supporting programs like this. How important is it to have this kind of community support? You know, we talked about the support from, you know, Sesame Street and PBS and efforts for you and the Eli crew here at SDPB, but it really is being fueled and funded and driven by the people who are listening to the show.
Absolutely. It's really been interesting. I think that prior to the pandemic, as I had an opportunity to talk to people around the state about our vision for Eli and why we wanted to do that, it really hit a nerve. And the response has been just overwhelming across the state. As a matter of fact, we even have added another Eli staff member in the West River, Amelia Meyer, who is our West River Early Learning Specialist. She has a reading specialist, and she has a long history in education. And just simply to meet the need specifically in the Black Hills and in the West River. And her welcome has been, you know, overwhelming also. So, yeah, it really does. It comes down to supporters helping us to do what we need to do. Absolutely.
Yeah. You can find more on our website, sdpb.org/early learning. Kevin Nelson leads the SDPB Early Learning Initiative and has been joining us to talk about Sesame Street and communities as well. Kevin, one more thing, and that's that text number. People can get text right to their phone. I think that is so important. Tell us a little bit about that, and then we just really, like, 15 seconds.
Oh, great. Yeah, it's called Bright by Text. And it's actually something, it's a nationwide texting program that puts, you know, great tips and games and child development tools in the hands of parents and caregivers. And it's, you can go to just text SD Kids, like South Dakota Kids, SD Kids at 274448. 274448. And it's free. And every couple of days you get some really good stuff.
Kevin Nelson, thank you so much.
Thank you, Laurie. It's always great to talk to you.
Enjoy a virtual adventure when interpreter and storyteller Joyce Jefferson brings to life the stories of three African-American women who dared to cross the dangerous and undeveloped Wild West. Women overcame enormous challenges to accomplish the extraordinary during and after the Gold Rush. We'll talk about an opportunity to see Joyce virtually in a moment, but first, Joyce Jefferson is with us. Thanks for being here, Joyce.
It is my pleasure and an honor. Thank you.
Tell me a little bit how you come to this work and come to really build these relationships as a storyteller and an interpreter of other women's stories. How did you begin this journey?
Well, I don't think I came to it. I think it came to me. There were people who were doing explorations and excavations of African-American homesteads and learning about African-Americans in South Dakota and the Black Hills. And they asked me if I would like to join them for a pit, Project in Time, excavation of Catherine Reynolds Homestead. And I didn't know what anything like that was, but I joined them, and I learned about Catherine Reynolds, and I learned more about Catherine Reynolds, and I just had an affinity for her, especially because I was born in Louisiana. She was born in Arkansas. The years that we were born, they coincided very closely, only by 100 years, though. And for her, she probably left her farm or plantation walking and made it here, probably on a stagecoach or maybe a wagon train. And by the time that she died, she had seen an airplane in the sky. And I thought that was just remarkable, the way that she transported herself and how transportation had changed in the years that she was alive. So I just wanted to learn more about her. And then I found out more about other African-Americans who lived here. I was very fortunate to work with the Journey Museum and have an exhibition called Corporals, Cooks, and Cowboys in 2000. And I had a group of people who worked with me, and we pulled it off, and we had 6 weeks of exhibition at the Journey Museum telling the history of African Americans in Dakota Territory and in South Dakota.
So you have done presentations hundreds of times. You're a real pro. You co-founded Three Voices Speaking from the Past, which helps South Dakotans understand healing racism, increasing cultural awareness. This program is upcoming as well, part of the South Dakota Humanities Council, I'm sorry, South Dakota Arts Council's Touring Artists Program. And I just want to ask you, what is the impact potentially of an audience member tuning in to one of these presentations and how it might change something in their life or transform something in their life today?
I'm really not sure. I think I was chosen as a vessel, and I just shared the information that I have been given, and it's up to the people in the audience to use or do with what they will once they see my presentation. Some people may not even be affected, and other people may have an enlightening experience, and I'm not sure if it will change their minds, but at least it may open their minds.
Yeah. And you keep your focus on what exactly you need to be doing to be that vessel then, right?
Yes, I do.
Oh. Well, a little bit more about this presentation. Journey Discussions presents Black Hills She Rose. That is coming up tomorrow, Thursday, 6 p.m. Mountain Time. You can pre-register by going to journeymuseum.org. And it's been such a difficult pandemic for interpreters and storytellers and touring artists for this past, 12, 13 months. This is a great opportunity for people to tune in virtually to see Joyce. Thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate that.
Well, thank you so much. And I'm very grateful to the South Dakota Arts Council, who has waived until June the 30th the fees that prospective sponsors would have to engage with. So if they are interested in hiring me, then perhaps they can get me for free.
Yeah. Take a look at that Touring Artists link online. Yeah, and we'll put a link up on our website so people can find that. Thanks, Joyce.
Thank you, Lori. It was a pleasure.
We are going to take a few minutes at the near the top of this hour to talk more about the Spring Member Drive and SDPB's Sound Vision Capital Campaign. Kara Hetland is with us from the Kirby Family Studio and SDPB's Sioux Falls Studio. Hey, Kara.
Hi, Lori. Thanks for having me. It is our spring member drive, and we're doing things just a little bit differently, but what remains the same is that we're asking you to become a financial supporter of South Dakota Public Broadcasting by calling 800-333-0789 or to give online at sdpb.org. We're also considering this our final phase of a vital capital campaign that we have been involved with for the last couple of years. As a way to inspire you to help close this out, we have a group of generous donors that has offered to match all gifts up to a total of $50,000. So if you're not a member of South Dakota Public Broadcasting, we're asking you to consider becoming one. If you are, we're asking you maybe to throw a little bit more money into the pot. Again, 800-333-0789 or online at sdpb.org.
So this phase of the Sound Vision campaign is really focusing on that local SDPP programming, those local SDPP reporters. And Kara, just talking to Kevin Nelson and realizing, you know, Sesame Street is more than this flagship for PBS. It is also in your communities. It goes rural. And there are people here in South Dakota like Kevin Nelson and the ELA program figuring out how do we get early learning resources into the hands of every rural South Dakotan child and parent and caregiver, and thinking about that so, you know, obsessively almost. Right. That is the kind of thing that this campaign has supported and continues to support. You can be part of that vital public resource. Give online, sdpb.org, or call 800-333-0789.
You know, we're building community at SDPB. We're doing this one song at a time through Carl Gerke and Jazz Nightly and through Moment in Sound on In the Moment. And we've had packed houses here back when we could all gather together. And we're looking forward to the day when we can do that again, that these studios that we built in Sioux Falls and Rapid City are designed to bring people together, to create that community through SDPB. We're asking you to support that now at 800-333-0789.
All right. So other ways that we bring a community one song at a time is through things like Moment in Sound, which you hear on In the Moment here. This is one of my favorite segments, Kara, and we've had countless musicians on In the Moment, kind of crammed into our smaller and then spread out into our larger studio spaces and in the Black Hill Surgical Hospital studio and SDPB's Black Hill studio and the bigger spaces there. You can make a gift to that Sound Vision campaign and help build community. It is so easy. Give online, sdpb.org, or call 800-333-0789. Just a minute left, Kara. Just tell us on the way out the door here how people can be part of this great SDPB community.
It's by calling 800-333-0789 or going to sdpb.org. And the other way we build community is one story at a time. And that's what you do so well, Lori, on In the Moment, especially with these artists in Moment in Sound, is you get their story. You find out who they are and why they do what they do. And those people doing something for a reason are the best stories of all. 800-333-0789 or online at sdpb.org.